brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys. It's sippin' time.
Yes, it's sippin' time. Hello and welcome to this Sips episode where everything good in life is worth discussing. As always, we are the best thing on at 2 a.m.
Well, that's debatable.
Okay, 1:30.
Fair enough.
Okay, 1:30. All right. I'll take that. Hell, I'll take 4 a.m. I really don't care. As long as we're the best thing at any point in time, I'm happy.
You know, even a broken clock's right twice a day.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So if we're the best thing on at least once a day, we're half as good as a broken clock.
That's exactly right.
That's pretty damn awesome. So, well, this is Made Man Bob, and joining me today are good old gal Denise.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. It's always fun to do some early morning drinking with the three of you.
And good old boy, or Made Man Maury.
Thank you, Bob. Excited to be here in the basement, and it's a good morning for early morning wake up.
And go to boy Justin.
Good morning. What a way to start the day.
Yeah, this job pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I never ever complained about this job ever. Well, our sip segments are all about wine, distilled spirits, tea, coffee, and here's some of the wines that we're going to be discussing today. So we have from Waypoint, we have their 2020 Richie Vineyard Chardonnay, and the Waypoint 2012 Fort Ross Vineyard Pinot Noir. From the folks at Camus, we have the Emelo Sauvignon Blanc 21, we have the Marisolet 2020 Reserve Chardonnay, the Sea Sun 2020 California Pinot Noir, and the Conundrum 2020, and last but not least, the Camus Special Select 2017. So why don't we go to Justin, and I hesitate to do this. Have him do our sips ratings. This is not going to work out well for me. I can feel it.
One sip. Give me a glass of water to wash out my mouth. Grody to the mouth. For sure.
I told you it wasn't going to work out well for me.
Bunga Bean, water. Bunga Bean, drink water. Drink water.
Two sips. Totally, but what else do you have?
Well, isn't that nice?
Not working out for me today. No. Right in the toilet. That's a record. That quick.
You don't want to be in the valley?
Three sips. Interesting. What was this again?
Interesting.
Four sips. Totally. Let's keep this secret to ourselves. Pour me another.
That's classified.
Five sips. Oh my God. I was unaware anything could be this good.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. 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 Yes.
To fall back on my 80s upbringing, gag me with a fork after that. So, oh, dear Lord, you are not or never will be a Valley guy. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Totally absurd.
Nicolas Cage was the only guy in Valley Girl. I mean, come on. You know, him and Deborah Foreman. No, it's just not you. I'm sorry. I'm just not buying it. All right, so let's move on to our first winery, and let's have Justin tell us about that in English.
Okay. The New Frontier Wine Company is a culmination of innovators and artisans from around the globe with the heritage of some of Napa's finest terroirs. With a large stable of winemakers sourcing fruit from such vineyards as Beckstoffer to Cologne, Beckstoffer Dr. Crane, Beckstoffer Las Piedras, Beckstoffer Georges III, Richie, Grieve, Starscape, Charles Heinz, Renwood Estate Ranch, and Lowry, to name a few. New Frontier brings more than 30 wines from across the globe. First wine we're going to be talking about.
Just waiting for him to keep going here.
is Waypoint 2020 Ritchie Vineyard Chardonnay. It is 100% Chardonnay, Ritchie Vineyard, Russian River, Sonoma Valley, and 62% New French Oak.
Russian River Valley, Sonoma County.
What he said. and aged it for 18 months after barrel fermentation at 14.1% alcohol by volume. The Ritchie Vineyard is planted with 40-plus-year-old Wente clone vines that are carefully cared for by Kent Ritchie. So this has a nice lemony color to it on the nose. It's like a brioche and hazelnut and an overwhelming nose of buttery, salty, buttered popcorn. On the palate, it's crisp, it's clean. There's like lemony citrus notes to it. It's crisp and there's a nice finish to it. Maury, what did you think?
Well, I'm going to be a little bit contrary.
How unusual. Yeah, Jesus.
Well, I agree with you on the color. It's a nice light straw, and I definitely get the typical Chardonnay nose. For me, this wine was definitely crisp and minerally, a lot of bright acidity and citrus on the palate, but I found it to be just a little bit tight and a little bit astringent for my palate. Shocking when you think about that it spent 18 months in 62% New French Oak. I was expecting a little bit more oak, and instead it really drinks like a stainless steel fermented, and even has barrel fermentation, but it drinks like a stainless steel aged and fermented Chardonnay. I found it to be, like I said, minerally, but for me it was a little tight, and I thought the finish was short and uninspiring. I've had plenty of wines before from the Ritchie Vineyard, and some amazing Ritchie grows some amazing Chardonnay grapes, but this particular one today, just on this day, spot, and location, just didn't really hit home for me. Denise, what do you think?
Well, I agree and I disagree with just about everything that you said.
That sounds
so
typical.
What's really interesting though in these tastings is that we taste them and then we make some notes and even score them. But then I go back to it when we start the show. Oh, there you go.
Going back to it.
Yeah, we got a... Maury just lost a glass of wine. Alcohol abuse.
Unusual. At least I didn't waste it. Break the glass.
So when I first tasted this wine, or let's start with the nose, I thought it was really light, almost florally, definitely some crisp citrus. And I'm like, oh, that's really nice. And on the palate, I found it to be sweet and a little tart at the same time. And then I just tried it again. I do like oak in my Chardonnay. When I first tried it, I really didn't think there was any oak in the Chardonnay.
Did you add water?
But now I get the oak. I get the wood. It's still a little sweet, even a little tart, which I kind of like. Haven't really found that in a lot of Chardonnays, but I get the oak. I think it's well balanced. I like the finish and I really like this wine. So I don't find it tight right now. In the beginning, it was just a little crisper than I want, more like a Sauv Blanc, but it's definitely opened up and I'm definitely getting the wood.
Tart's the right word. I definitely found it to be tart.
Interesting, right?
Puckery.
Yeah, on the sides of your cheeks. Like, really? But just, where'd that come from?
Did you aerate
I'm with
it?
You. It's changed.
I did not aerate this wine.
Okay.
Did you?
I did not.
Okay.
Yeah, it's changed a lot sitting in the glass. It was definitely much tighter when we first opened it. I purposely didn't over chill it.
The temperature's just right. I'm happy with that because temperature can be a big variable. And when you let it sit, it warms up and then it gets some oxygen.
Well, a lot of times what we'll do, especially with the whites, is I will chill them down a little bit further than normal. So you can start there because it takes us, we'll talk on the radio for an hour, but it takes us hours to do a show. And it will slowly warm up in your hand. It'll slowly warm up in the room, and you can sort of get that. But I only put in for a very short period of time just to get a little bit of a chill on them. And as this one has gotten air and as this one has warmed up, it's significantly changed.
Yeah, I think it's much better on the palate right now.
Oh, yeah.
But for me on the nose, it's still very, very light. Mm-hmm. I'm struggling to get a lot of different aromas and anything like that on the nose. I mean, it's pleasant enough on the nose, but it just, it doesn't jump out
of the
glass.
I got more of the tropical
fruit. It's really nice on the palate. It's deceiving.
When we first poured it.
Mm-hmm.
When it was a little bit more chilled before it had gotten air, there was that tropical fruit note to it. And that's sort of blown off. I do get sort of like a brioche kind of toasted bread, light nose on that. And then there was the buttered popcorn that was there about half an hour ago. That's sort of blown down. It's not there as much. There's a little bit of a buttery note, but it's more oaky. And that's, I'm with you. I prefer my Chardonnays more oaky than buttery. This is definitely more on the side of what I'm looking at. And as it warms up and gets more air, the oak is more coming out. Now, it's not an overpowering oak, but it's overpowered that butteriness that I got when it first opened.
Yeah.
See, I didn't get any butter at all. And I really felt like the oak just never appeared for me. So, you know, if I didn't know differently, I'd wonder whether we were drinking from the same bottle. But, you know,
it's not because you poured it all over the floor, so it's really never
that
had
could
the
be it.
No,
yeah.
because
opportunity
I made
to
my
open.
Notes when I first tried it, but I did come back to it and didn't really find much of a change. But I think that underscores the fact that a lot of things are dependent when you taste them are dependent on many things, which is why we know the Japanese guys who had the same lunch
every day for 40 years.
Yeah. What you've had to eat, where you are, who you're with, the time of day, the location, the weather, the barometric pressure, all those things can affect your palate on a particular
and
day.
And I think she's saying the same thing I am. The oak is there. It's present. It's not, some of these Chardonnays you get, it's like getting hit with a giant bat made of oak. You know, I mean, it's not that at all.
No.
But when we first tasted it, there was not the oak present. And that has come forward and pushed some of the other stuff into the background. So it's nice and crisp. It's, like you said, it's tart yet sweet. I'm getting the oak, but, you know, excellent wine. So we're going to be rating the Waypoint Richie Chardonnay, 3 sips.
Interesting.
Clouds and crashing surf, iridescent dunes reflecting by the light of a rising glowing moon. Seashore mesmerizing, night breeze hypnotizing, we've come across these back roads none too soon. Look to the left, to the right, keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love.
Hey, and we're back, and we just finished discussing the Waypoint 2020 Richie Vineyard Chardonnay. Gave that a well-deserved 3 sips. So we're going to be moving on to our next wine, and we're going to have Denise tell us about that one.
Great. So this is the Wayport 2021 Fort Ross Vineyard Pinot Noir from the Fort Ross Seaview Vineyard, Sonoma County, 1,700 feet elevation with views of the Pacific Ocean, and the ABV comes in at 14%.
Wish I had a view of the Pacific Ocean.
Me too. I almost added a beautiful view of the Pacific Ocean.
We're in Florida. I got a view of the swamp.
Agreed. So this Pinot, typical color of a Pinot, beautiful, light to medium garnet, looks great in the glass. I thought the nose was particularly interesting. I really like the nose on this. I found it to be just florally, just a lovely full-bodied nose, which was much different than the palate for me. And on the palate, I thought it was really mild, definitely something I hadn't expected. When I, you know, nosed the wine, I thought, oh, this is going to be fantastic. And it is a great wine, so I don't want to take that away. But it's a little earthy. I think it hits the back of my throat and palate the most. It's not as full-bodied as I would like in a Pinot, although this, I guess, could be described as a typical Pinot for you know, lighter Pinot lovers. I tend to like my Pinots just a little more full-bodied. But I thought it's beautiful. It's delicious. I thought the finish was nice. It's pleasant. It has a short to medium finish. And I think overall, it's a really interesting and pleasant Pinot.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's you know, there's sort of two schools of Pinot. Mm-hmm. There's the heavier and then there's the lighter. And right. I think they're definitely making it towards that. But I'm with you. The nose on it really kind of intrigued me because it's hard to describe. It's mm-hmm. sort of creamy and a little buttery, but almost there's a dusty earthiness to it. And that's blown off a little bit as it's got air, but it's still there. And as it's gotten air, the first thing I got was like slightly underripe blueberries, kind of tart blueberries. Mm-hmm. That also has died down a little bit, the tartness. The tannins are there, but they're very silky smooth. They're not, you know, you get a great mouth feel for you, get a good mouth coat to it, but they're not grab you by the throat and shake you kind of tannins. It's fresh and crisp. And on the back palate, I get a little bit of like a stewed fruit.
Yeah, it changes a little. It mm-hmm. really does. I think it gets a little drier as it opens up, which I found exactly. really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really silky and sort of clean. Yeah. And then as it sits in the glass, it's like, wow.
It was tart and fruity when yeah. we opened it. And now it's definitely much drier. The right. tannin, again, the tannin's coming forward, but it's not the punch you in the face mm-hmm. tannin, but it's that tongue coating yeah. dryness. It's interesting as heck.
Yeah, yeah, I like the way it changes.
I mean, it goes in different directions at one time. I'm kind of digging it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Maury?
Well, when I got to wine number two, I was thinking maybe it's just me, my palate's off today. But later on, I think we have some spectacular wines that I really liked and rated fairly highly. But again, on this winery, shocks me because I love most of the things that Chuck Wagner and family and the Camus brands produce. Particularly one of my favorite Pinots is their Belle Gloss Pinot, and it's disappointing that we don't have that to compare here. But that being said, this particular wine, for me, again, fell a little bit flat. I found it to be a little bit closed. I love the nose. I agree with Denise on the color and the nose, and a lot of fruit and cherry on the nose. For me, cherry came through very strong. On the palate, I found it to be a little bit unidimensional, a little bit thin, a little bit light. It's not so much the full body. Denise found that the complexity and the layers and the different flavors just really weren't there for me. I found it to be a little bit tight. I found it to be a little bit tart or even astringent. It didn't have as much complexity as I was looking for. The finish was a little short. And so, honestly, for me, I was a little bit disappointed. I think it's well-made wine, but it just didn't really strike my palate as I expected it to today. Justin?
So when I started drinking this wine earlier today, kind of earthy and tannic, and then as the tannins went away, the taste of the sea came into it, and I got that nice saltiness that's probably permeating the soil because of its proximity to the ocean. And it's kind of like that baby in Mork and Mindy that aged in reverse. It's a pretty cool trick. What'd you think, Bob?
That was what was his name? The comedian.
Jonathan Winters.
Jonathan Winters, yeah.
Oh, right, right.
I'm trying to place it. I'm like, I can see the guy's face.
It's the Jonathan yeah. Winters of wine.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like Benjamin Button.
I was going to say yeah. it were Benjamin Button, sure.
But, you know, again, a really nice effort from these guys. Waypoint, they're kind of new. They just opened up a tasting room in downtown Napa. We're going to go there in a couple of weeks and check the place out. But
awesome.
They're sourcing grapes. So, you know, you've got to do what you got to do with the grapes that you can get. And so far, I think they're doing well with it. I think they're putting out some quality wine for the money. So we're going to be rating the Waypoint 2021 Fort Ross Vineyard Pinot Noir. Well-deserved. Three sips.
Interesting.
So let's go to Maury to tell us a little bit about our next family of wines.
Next, we'll be talking about Camus Vineyards. Chuck Wagner and his late parents, Lorna and Charlie, started Camus Vineyards in 1972. They were a family of farmers with roots in Napa Valley dating back to the 1850s. Chuck Wagner's parents, Lorna Belgloss, and Charlie Wagner Sr. were both born to families that helped shape Napa Valley's wine industry in the late 1800s and beyond. In 1941, Charlie Wagner and Lorna Belgloss, Chuck's parents, purchased 73 acres just a few hundred yards from the Wagner home ranch, where they planted fruit orchards. One of their first acts on their new land was also to plant 10 acres of wine grapes. In the 1960s, Charlie and Lorna pulled out their prune and walnut trees to devote their property entirely to wine grapes, including Pinot Noir, Johannesburg Riesling, and a special clone of Cabernet Sauvignon that Charlie had acquired from Stag's Leap grower Nathan Fay. The Wagners sold their grapes to Inglenook Winery and Sonoma Vineyards, among others, and were highly regarded grape growers and home winemakers. It was in 1972 that Charlie and Lorna, along with their son Chuck, decided to go all in and formalize the family's long-standing tradition of winemaking when they recognized that they can make a better living by selling great quality home wines that they had been making from grapes they were growing on their property. They established their own winery and decided to name it Camus Vineyards after a Mexican land grant owned by George Yount that had once encompassed their land. In 1975, Chuck and his dad noticed that there were a few barrels that tasted better than the rest, so they decided to separate them from the batch and bottle them under a new label called Special Selection. Camus Special Selection is the only wine in the world honored twice as Wine Spectator Magazine's Wine of the Year for both their 84 and 1990 vintages. The first wine,
fresh wine, no more of this old stuff.
The first wine we're going to talk about is the Emelo Sauvignon Blanc 2021. The grapes from this expression come from both the Napa and Susan Valleys. It comes in at 12.6% ABV. Emelo is owned and made by Jenny Wagner, Chuck Wagner's daughter, and named after her maternal relatives who arrived in Napa Valley from Sicily in 1923. For many years, Emelo's ran a rootstock nursery providing grapevines to many of the area's growers, including Jenny's father, Chuck. So this wine is nearly colorless. It's a very, very pale hint of yellow. On the nose, we've got lots of tropical flavors, honeydew, peach, honeysuckle, and then a little hint of stone and sandalwood. On the palate, it's got a bright citrus note. It's got crisp acidity. You get hints of kumquat. It drinks beautifully. Very nice profile, similar to many of the Sauvignon Blancs that we've enjoyed from California. I found the finish to be short, but I thought it was very well made and very pleasant, something you could really enjoy in the sun by the pool for hours on end. What'd you think, Justin?
So I got up the notes that you mentioned, also a white melon on the palate and a little cedar on the back palate. The finish was very light. Definitely a poolside sipper. You nailed that one. What did you think, Denise?
There's very little, I think, that I can add to the descriptions that both of you have provided.
Means I got something right.
Well, let's not get excited.
Yeah, don't get ahead of yourself, Junior.
Let's not get excited. Yeah. But I love the nose. I mean, for me, the peach and the honeydew just jump out of this glass, and I think that that's fantastic. And the palate's nice. You know, it's exactly what you described. There's, like I said, not much I can add. It is bright. It is citrusy. It is crisp. I agree with both of you. I thought the finish was, you know, pretty short. But that's okay. It is a lovely wine that you could sit by the pool, and we all know that living where.
Well, it's not an expensive wine.
Oh,
you know, this is $20-ish bottle, $20-$25. So I mean, this is exactly what it's supposed to be. It's something that you're gonna. This is your everyday.
Right.
Yeah. Very approachable.
So, yeah.
Very affordable and very accessible.
And I'm happy to drink something this good every day. So. You know, again, it's got a really
pretty nose. I like being introduced to wines like this because, I mean, we've all, you know, had our share of Sauvignon Blancs. But I know people that perhaps only drink Sauvignon Blanc. and
we call them heathens.
You know, if I bring them a bottle, I would like it to be something other than what they're currently drinking. They tend to buy their stuff by the case and just continue to drink the same brand. So it's really nice to be introduced to other brands that, you know, we try and enjoy. And then the next time I want to bring them a bottle of wine, I'm like, you know, let's bring this and see if we can, you know, get them interested in something.
Yeah, the people
different.
That only drink Sauvignon Blanc.
And then if I have to drink
or,
it, it's something that I want to drink.
Yeah.
Always a good fallback.
If you only drink Sauvignon Blanc.
My definition of palatable might be slightly different from yours.
You're a
snob. Exactly. Yes, I am. it's a well-made Sauvignon Blanc. Again, the honeydew, a little bit of white peach. A little bit of white flour on the nose. It's got a very sweet nose to it, like a honeysuckle. And then again, on the palate, it's very bright, very crisp,
but not too tart.
No,
not nearly as tart as some of the things we've had earlier.
Yeah,
I thought it was well balanced. And honestly, you know, the price is in line. Most Sauvignon Blancs, you know, this is right in line in terms of pricing. There's very few Sauvignon Blancs. You've got to go out of your way to find one that's fairly expensive.
Yeah, exactly. And if I'm, you know, in an equal playing field of price, this is going to be the one I'm going to probably grab because this one's extremely well done. You know, well done. We're going to be rating the MLO. Sauvignon Blanc 2021, a well-deserved three sips.
Interesting.
Bob, you want to talk about the next wine?
Yep. So that brings us to our next wine. Let me grab it here. You know, when we do the whiskey episodes, the glasses are a lot shorter. It's a lot easier to move them around.
A lot easier.
Got to get microphones and cords over these things. Mm-hmm. So we have next up is the Marseillais 2020 Reserve Chardonnay. It's from Santa Lucia Highlands. Fermentation and aging is in a mix of old and new French oak for 11 months. Malolactic fermentation on a portion of the wine, and the barrels are hand-stirred to promote a creamy texture, about 14.5% ABV. So Marseillais began 30 years ago with a drive from the Napa Valley down to the Santa Lucia Highlands in search of land to plant Chardonnay. Their first vineyards were planted in 1988 on that land that previously was dedicated to grow crops and cattle grazing. Only about 20 miles from the coast, the Highlands has a drama all its own, with morning fog, bright sunshine, and big gusts of afternoon wind. Marseillais is led by Charlie Wagner, Chuck's son, and in addition to the vines, they also grow Lisbon and Meyer lemons, my favorite, absolute favorite lemons on earth. And over time, an unexpected benefit emerged. Hints of delicate lemon blossoms began to come out in the Chardonnay. At least that's what they're telling us. So the scent and flavor carrying over from the nearby orchard. So, and I absolutely get the lemon note. You know, they're dead on with that. Lemons, very clean oak. Kind of a Granny Smith apple.
I find the lemon more on the nose than on the palate. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not as citrusy or lemony on the palate as some of our other wines, particularly the Sauvignon Blanc.
No. Well,
but it's a beautiful, delicate lemon on the nose.
It's a very, very rounded palate. There's no edges to this at all. Very, very soft. Very, very round. I get a general citrus note, but it's not. It's not leaning more toward lemon for me. It's the opposite direction than citrus. A little bit of honeydew melon. A little bit of honey. Yeah, delicious. Delicious. What do you think, Denise?
You know, there's a description about this, and it's lemon bars. And when I first saw that, I'm like, ooh, I like lemon bars. I like everything lemon, really. And I actually use a lot of lemons. Probably daily.
Well, you got to live with that sour son of a gun on the end of the table. I'm sure you're used to
so
it by
I thought,
now.
Oh, maybe sweet and toasty. You know, that's what I was thinking. But for me, on the nose, it's lemon zest. I mean, I really get the sharp, crisp,
that's
oily
it. Yeah. It's not
lemon,
that sweet,
as if I'm zesting lemons,
kind of lemon,
and it's right there. So Maury said it was a little milder with regard to the lemons, but I found it to be very lemon
palate.
Forward on the nose and lovely.
Yeah.
And that's perfect. For the palate, though, or on the palate for me, I'm not sure. It's described with sharp acidity. And for me, that seems to be coming through as a little metallic. Mm. And that happened in the beginning. And I went back to it and it's still there. So unfortunately for me, that sharp acidity, or as I describe it, that metallic taste is overpowering some of the other flavors in that flavor profile. And so I'm having a hard time finding, you know, the melon and the honeydew. And I wished it were there because I thought the nose was so lovely. The finish is fine. It's a little short, but that's how I found this wine.
I think your genetics are such that you're missing an enzyme, and therefore
it's not
you're
the only thing I'm missing, Maury.
Yeah, the metallic.
We've been saying that for years. I mean, like that poor woman's missing a few brain cells.
But honestly, I didn't get the metallic at all. I've gone back to it after you mentioned that. I didn't even think the acidity was sharp. I thought it had a nice balanced amount of acidity. It was not nearly as tart as some
other
things.
Very, very round.
Very rounded. Very round, yeah. I thought it had a beautiful amount of oak. It had just the right amount of oak. It was not an oak bomb, and yet the oak was not absent. I felt like the oak was a little bit absent in the earlier Chardonnay. In this one, the oak's there, but it's not overpowering. It's balanced. It adds a hint of earthiness. I thought it was a beautifully made wine. I thought the finish was medium. It was mouth coating. It was definitely creamy like they were shooting for. I thought it was delicious, in sharp contrast to their other. Now, Mère Soleil makes another Chardonnay that is completely unoaked. I believe they call it the silver, and it comes in a gray ceramic bottle. And that drinks more like a Sauv Blanc. It's very stainless steely, almost a little bit metallic. Whereas this one, for me, really hits all the boxes.
But I think the studies show that women, in particular, can find the metallic and petroleum flavors in wines and come out. And unfortunately, for some women, myself included, just might not be a really good person to rate some wines that flavor comes through for us.
Well, it's like the people with the cilantro taste bitter. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what I was kidding, but you really, I think something in your palate is picking that up and
absolutely
magnifying.
Well, everybody's body chemistry is different. And right. And tomorrow you may not taste that, so you never know.
Right.
What'd you think, Justin?
I got the stainless steel magnets when I was a kid. That taste.
So you used to lick those,
yeah,
then?
Yeah, I did used to lick those.
Any particular reason why?
I know, they look really cool.
Look at him. Just look at him. I mean,
And lemon oil, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I like.
Licking magnets. We'll be back.
It's not just the destination, but baby, the whole elation riding down this lover's avenue. As slow as a willow blows, or as fast as the whirlwind grows, we glide beneath the stars in cobalt blue. Look to the left, to the right. Keep your eyes on the road, my darling. Wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows. My hand is yours forever, sweet love. Our eyes ahead on these back roads with a view.
All right, so we're back after hearing Justin talk about licking magnets. So,
good memories.
Are you waiting for the opportune moment?
I think that's a little foreshadowing for the title of this episode.
Yeah.
I have a feeling.
So we're going to be rating the Mère Soleil 2020 Reserve Chardonnay. Well-deserved. Four sips.
That's classified.
And we're going to have Justin tell us about our next one.
Well, now we're going to talk about CSUN 2020 California Pinot Noir. Let's see what child memories this evokes. Grapes for this release were grown in Monterey and San Benito counties, aged in a combination of new and neutral French oak, and it's 14.4% alcohol by volume. And if you drink a lot of wine, you're going to slur your words too. Each region where the grapes are grown for CSUN Pinot Noir contributes subtly different qualities to the wine. The sourcing location of grapes shift from vintage to vintage, and it is this flexibility that enables them to adjust to create the best possible wine in a given year. Maury, what did you think?
Well, I thought this was a really interesting wine. I love the color on it. The color was dark and deep, really kind of a dark cherry color for me. On the nose, I got lots of cherry, some toasted wood, some earthiness, clove. Somebody talked about a hint of s'mores. I honestly didn't get the s'mores, but everything else I thought was beautiful. Cedar, leather, beautiful palate, nose rather, excuse me. And on the palate, lots of cherries, raspberries. And then on the back end, you get some pepper, leather, tobacco. I thought it was really interesting, much more full-bodied than the previous Pinot that we drank, much more my style of Pinot. And I thought the finish was long. So all in all, a wine I'm not familiar with prior to today, but really in my wheelhouse. I thought it drinks beautifully. And honestly, if you were to take the price into account, it's a winner. I mean, it's...
I was going to say, did you see the price?
Yes. Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a $20-ish dollar bottle of wine that's easily competes with $40 and $50 Pinots. Now, you don't always have to spend a lot on Pinots, and they're not traditionally as high as cabs. But for an entry level, and a lot of people, a lot of Americans are stuck on, you know, $20 is their sweet spot. Yeah. I think this nails it for a Pinot in that price range. I don't think you could do any better.
It's a Wagner family. They generally don't put out bad wine, you know, so it's always, there's always going to be something good there.
And occasionally there's going to be someone that doesn't fit everyone's flavor profile. And case in point, I wasn't a fan of the Waypoint, but this wine really, I think, checks all the boxes. And when you factor in the very reasonable price point, I think it's a winner.
Well, Waypoint's not them, but
yeah, no, I know. Yeah. But in comparison, this is a winner.
Right. Well, I spoke about the previous Pinot, and apparently I described this Pinot as the Pinot that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. A little more full-bodied, a really nice mouthfeel, and a huge bowl of cherries on the nose for me. And that's just so fabulous. Yeah. I mean, it smells so nice. It's so inviting. And then it tastes great, you know. And I like the finish too. I thought it had a medium finish, and I thought that the finish lingered.
Yeah.
And that's always nice. Yeah. I hate when it just disappears so quickly.
No, I give it a long finish because
I really like that.
Yeah, for your average California Pinot, this has got a pretty long finish. I mean, most Pinots 100%. are, especially the fruity style ones, don't last very long.
Now, in fairness, I think we all ran this through the Venturi, and I'll have to get some air, and I generally believe that Pinots benefit from air more than most, so I'd like to decant my Pinots or Venturi them, even when they're not super expensive. And this particular one, although I didn't try it straight from the bottle, I went straight for the Venturi, and it was drinking beautifully from the minute I put it in the glass.
It's unusual for you. Usually, you just drink out of the bottle.
Well, that's true.
There's probably no magnets in this, right, Justin?
No magnets, but I would pair this with a Connecticut wrapper cigar for you cigar smokers out there.
I was thinking you were chewing on a wooden pencil and then lead, because it's got a little graphite in this.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, I've ingested a lot of lead. Isn't it obvious, Doc?
Yeah, it's obvious.
Eating those paint chips when he was a kid, you can tell. I think his mom was eating the paint chips too. So,
I mean, but I was really expecting a comment about eating pencil, licking pencils, because this does have a little hint of graphite.
Well,
in it.
He was born learning how to play the banjo with his feet.
Pencil,
so,
but I didn't taste the pencil.
And does that fall under the pica condition?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you just lick it and don't ingest it. I'm not sure it's still pica.
Okay.
What's pica?
Oh,
never mind. It'll take too long to explain to you.
Tend to
eat stuff, inanimate objects.
Yeah, sand and rocks and
cool. Yeah.
Pica is the condition.
But, yeah, I mean, a beautiful Pinot, absolutely beautiful Pinot. I haven't had one since we were at Camus last January, and I remember sitting in that beautiful yard and drinking it, and going, "Wow, this is really good." Just cherries, cherries, cherries on the nose.
Oh, the nose is so great on this wine. Mm. So great.
And I'm with you. This is more my style. I'm not the lighter, fruitier kind of Pinot. This is more leaning towards me. So a great wine, a great effort from the folks over at the Wagner Family of Wines. So we're going to be rating the CSUN 2020 California Pinot, a well-deserved 4 sips.
That's classified.
So we're going to go on to our next wine, and we're going to have Denise tell us about that one.
Oh, okay. That sounds great. Well, our next wine is Conundrum 2020 California Red Blend. I like blends. It's a blend of Zinfandel, Petite Sirah, and Cabernet Sauvignon. What could be bad about this wine? It's got an ABV of 14.6%. Charlie Wagner Sr., who co-founded Camus Vineyards in 1972 with his wife, Lorna, and son, Chuck, would regularly mix different wines at the dinner table to find the perfect glass to pair with his meal. Blending was not very common in California at the time, so his experimentation was ahead of its time. Fast forward to 1989, when Conundrum White was born, followed in 2011 by Conundrum Red. Today, it's Charlie's grandson, Charlie Wagner II, who keeps Conundrum as original as ever. So, that description makes this wine very interesting right out of the gate. I'm going to do the same as Bob. It has, for me, on the nose, it has this beautiful, earthy, just as they describe it here, the semi-sweet baking chocolate. I'm not sure that I get a lot of nectarine in this,
as they describe it,
but definitely like the plum, the backdrop of toasted oak aromas. It's got a lovely, lovely nose. When I first tried this wine, I'm going to try it again. Sorry about that. It was a little on the sweet side. That has mellowed. It's not as sweet, but I still get a little hint of sweetness with that chocolate, which I think is fabulous. I mean, it's like a chocolate cake. It's delicious. It's full-bodied. It's got a lovely mouthfeel. It's got a nice lingering finish. Overall, I'm a big fan of this wine. I mean, I could think of so many things that I would pair with this wine or just drink a bottle of it without anything.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Conundrum and the white preceded it by 20 years was known to be kind of a sweet wine, almost desserty.
Really?
Very light and lively. And I was expecting this to be sort of sweet and fruity. And I must admit, I haven't had this wine in a long time. And
that, well, if it makes you feel better, we think of you as sweet and fruity.
Thank you. This wine is a lot less well known than the Conundrum White, which they ultimately spun off into its own winery and label. But I agree with you, Denise. I think all the things you mentioned, I mean, it's really, chocolate cake with even a little coconut shavings. It's like a, what do you call it? Like a Black Forest cake? Or
something like that. German chocolate
cake.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was thinking German chocolate.
Yeah, because you get that toasty.
Oh, yeah. It's happy hour around
here.
Man.
Right? Yeah, right?
But it's decidedly better than when I first poured it. When I first poured it, it was a little closed right out of the bottle.
I underrated it.
And I underrated it, too.
And now I have to change that rating.
I know. I thought that it was just okay. But over the last hour that it sat in the glass... I got I've improved my thought on it, my rating, and I've enjoyed it more. Again, really unique. I'm not sure what kind of food I'd pair this with, but I found it very enjoyable.
I was going to say, I'd pretty much pair it with chips. I don't care what food I put with it. I mean,
I think Denise was description was spot on, though. You know, maybe a little nutmeg and clove, but really that German chocolate cake with the coconut and the chocolate and the cassis really kind of comes through. I thought it was fantastic. And again, I know we don't like to spend a lot of time talking about money and price, but for the price, you're talking about a 20-something dollar bottle. It's hard to beat.
Yeah.
It's hard to get something better at this price point. Right.
Well, Justin, again, you're a foodie. That's Camus. Camus is always value for money for me. I mean, it always has been.
Except for their flagships are
yeah, that's the only one that's really elevated in price. But even that, considering what it is, I mean, wine of the year two times, it's still affordable.
Right, right.
I'd pair it with Gear Deli chocolate brownies all day.
Mm.
Not those special brownies.
No, not those.
Okay.
That's another California episode.
Yeah, I was going to say that's, Yeah, it's Justin visits the dispensary. So.
Episode.
Yeah. Don't tempt me.
Yeah.
Well, that falls under the category of smokes. We are sip suds and smokes. Maybe we need to do a
smokes
episode.
I book my flight while we're talking. I'm in.
Yeah, this is really just a wonderful glass of wine for the money. It's just so well done. The chocolate. There's I get dark chocolate. I get like wet stones on the nose.
I think this falls under the category of anybody can make a great $100 bottle, but to make a great bottle at a reasonable price is a find and a rarity. Yeah. And
well, remember when you first got into wine, how many years ago? You know, you would go out and you would grab, you know, Robert Parker or Wine Spectator, and you would run to the store looking for that one that was rated 95, because that's the one you, you. Then once you developed your palate, you threw all that stuff away. And then you knew if I threw money at it, I could find that 95 bottle. But finding that 89 or 90 bottle that's $20 or the 88 bottle that's 15 is more exciting to you than spending $1,000 on a $96 bottle. I mean, sure, it's going to taste great, but it's like you're Mel Fisher finding the damn pirate ship and finding the Spanish gold. When you can find that wine that drinks, a, you know, one or two levels above its price point, that's what gets me excited in wine.
100%.
And this wine is available? I mean,
yeah,
widely available.
Widely available. Yeah. I mean, this is your dinner party wine. So you have, you know, different characters coming over.
Oh, no, you're going to drink a lot of wine. You guys come over, no. Yeah.
You don't want to spend $100 a bottle because you're going to, you know, pull out 6, 8, 10 bottles. You pull this out, I think everybody at your dinner party is going to be happy.
Everybody can
whether
find
they're
something
light Pinot drinkers,
enjoy.
They could be cab drinkers. I think everybody could be really happy with this wine.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good not find. A huge full-bodied cab,
no,
by any stretch, but. It
but I'm a cab drinker, and I
and
would drink
it,
this.
It has appeal to cab drinkers. But mm-hmm. I want to point out that I take a slight correction with what Bob says, and that is I don't think of Camus as a bargain brand making mass-produced, no. low-priced
well,
wines.
Not this, but the others that they have. And again, not bargain wines, not cheap or anything. I mean, but
I just
really
want to clarify that.
Well
that
made
for the
bargain.
Wine.
For the money.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, most of their wines.
And fairly priced.
All hit above their price point.
Correct. So, and I think that's the thing to look for in wine. Yeah. Wines that hit
you,
and drink above the price point.
You get much more value for your dollar with them than you do a lot of people. So
I'll agree with you. A lot of people, you're paying for the name, you're paying for the label, you're paying for the packaging. Like the days of Absolut, we like that it's in the bottle, not in the packaging.
All right, well, we're going to be rating the Conundrum 2020 California Red Blend, a well-deserved 4 sips.
That's classified.
And that brings us to our last wine, which is the Camus Special Select, Napa Valley Cabernet 2017, 100% Cabernet Sauvignon, 15.4% ABV. And before we go forward with this wine, the one thing I did want to point out and talk about is how amazing the Wagner family has been to a charity that I work for that is very near and dear to my heart, which is Honor Flight. We were fortunate to make contact with the Wagner family, one of our people down here. And once they heard about what we were doing and raising funds to fly our surviving World War II, Korean, and Vietnam veterans to Washington, D.C. to see the memorials of their service, he didn't even blink, and he said, how about I send you 500 bottles of Special Select? We'll put a special label on it. So if you see this episode, if you listen to this episode online, you can see the pictures. They have a special bottle. You cannot buy this bottle. You can only get it if you go to one of our fundraising dinners with 4 of our World War II veterans' pictures on it. The only thing on it that says Camus is a little strip at the bottom. They basically gave the veterans the whole label. And these are provided to us for these dinners 100% free. So we've been able to raise well over $100,000 so far to fly these heroes up to Washington, D.C. So amazing family.
It's a beautiful bottle.
But
really beautiful.
The wine, plums, a little bit of licorice on it. Just dark, dark, concentrated fruit. And on the palate, blackberries and blueberries and plums and
fruit.
This one never disappoints. What do you think, Denise?
I agree. Everything that you said, you get the licorice. I get this foresty, woody note on the nose. It's got blueberries and sweet cherries for me. It's got a great mouthfeel. It's full-bodied. It's delicious. It's got a nice, long, lingering finish. Love it.
But I would say that this wine also has improved dramatically in the glass. It went from 10 to 11 in the glass over the last 45 minutes.
These go to 11.
Everything you've said, and it's just fantastic. It's a perennial favorite. I've tried to acquire it almost every year, and it's a wonderful wine you can always pull out and people will be impressed.
Yeah, you can't beat it. I mean, great wine. Well, we're going to be rating the Camus Special Select Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon 2017, a well-deserved five sips. And again, a huge thank you to the Wagner family for their incredible generosity in helping us honor our surviving World War II Korean Vietnam veterans and helping out the cause of honor flight. So, well, that's all the time we have today. I want to thank our co-hosts for joining today. Thank you, Denise.
Thank you. Wow, delicious.
Thank you, Maury.
Thank you, Bob. Another spectacular morning in the basement.
And thank you, Justin.
Thank you for an amazing day in the wine cave.
The wine cave.
Well, for Sips, Suds, and Smokes, this is Made Man Bob reminding you life is too short to drink bad wine, and fortunately, we didn't have to do that today.
Nope.
I don't know about you guys, but every time I look at this bottle, I see two of the veterans that aren't with us anymore. And it breaks my heart.
That's heartbreaking.
We'll I miss Julie. That on but picture of that bottle on Facebook before
they were the kind enough to host. They hosted several of our veterans at a dinner at the winery. So,
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're listening to us online, do yourself a favor and tap.
Just tap it in
the subscribe button.
Give it a little tappy, tap tap taparoo.
The easiest way to listen to our show is to ask Siri, Alexa, Google, Uncle Larry, or whoever it is that talks to you on your phone, play podcast Sip Suds and Smokes. We love your feedback, and you can reach us at info@sipsudsandsmokes.com. Our tasting notes flow out on Twitter and Instagram with our handle @sipsudsandsmokes, and our Facebook page is always buzzing with lots of news. You'll also be able to interact with the thousands,
millions,
of other fans on those social media platforms. Do us a favor. Take the time to rate this episode if you're listening to us online. That's a big help to us, and we get to see your feedback as well. Come back, join us for another episode, and keep on sipping.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip Suds and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the Good Old Boys, will see y'all next time.